Today on Pilot's Discretion, we're joined by airline pilot and author Doug Morris. He tells us what pilots really need to know about weather, the difference between flying Boeing and Airbus airplanes, and his tips for nervous passengers. Pilot's Discretion starts right now. Welcome, pilots. I'm your host, John Zimmerman of Sporties, and thanks for listening. If you like Pilot's Discretion, there are three things to know. First, you can catch up on every previous episode by visiting sporties.com/podcast. Second, you can subscribe and leave a review in your favorite podcast app to help others find the show. And third, you can always send your comments or guest ideas to podcast@sporties.com. Today, our guest is Doug Morris. He's a Boeing 787 captain with over 25,000 hours logged during his long career. And in addition to flying, he has written for Air Canada's In-Flight magazine for over 20 years. Doug is also a certified meteorologist who once worked for Atmospheric Environment Canada as a forecaster. He is the author of multiple books, including This Is Your Captain Speaking, Stories from the Flight Deck, and Pilot Weather, From Solo to the Airlines. Doug, welcome to Pilot's Discretion.
John, thank you. And welcome from Toronto, Canada, or should I say, welcome aboard, This Is Your Captain Speaking.
Doug, your background as a pilot and a meteorologist gives you an interesting perspective on weather flying, and I'd like to begin there.
Yeah.
To start out, what do you think is the most misunderstood weather concept among pilots? As you talk to pilots, what do we not get?
I think the pilot, general pilot, is just not getting the big picture. And frequently I'm asked, Doug, how do you get the big picture in weather? What do I have to do to get the big picture? What sort of forecast products do I need to be comfortable with the big picture? And that is a tough question to answer. And to specifically designate certain products or forecasts, it's a tough gig. For example, if I fly from Toronto down to Santiago, South America, I'll be looking at satellite imagery more than the tasks along the way. But if you're flying a 100-mile trek from your local airport, and satellite imagery is not that important. So it's the big picture that I find a lot of pilots don't really get through their career. In fact, I'm flying with very senior, experienced pilots, and the weather is the least understood, and they treat it like voodoo. They know it exists, the products are there, but they just don't know what to do with them.
I've often thought pilots sometimes approach weather like a doctor who is doing an operation but didn't understand the underlying condition. It's, we're going to operate on the knee, but do we understand what's actually driving the problem in the first place? And that's where that big picture, it's sort of a matter of curiosity maybe on some level, do you think?
I find about 10% of pilots really appreciate weather. They love the intricacies of weather. And so they're easy to talk to, but just the other 90% of the other pilots, they're kind of reluctant to learn about weather, and they just give it a miss.
I occasionally hear people say that pilots have too many weather tools these days, and that in some way that feels overwhelming. Do you think that's true or not true?
John, great point. In fact, I just came in from Dublin yesterday. I was flying with a supervisor watching me train a pilot. In fact, when I landed yesterday, I just became a line indoctrination captain for Air Canada on the 787. But we were talking about WSI. That's the app, weather app we use. And, the supervisor was showing me stuff that I didn't realize what was buried in that app. It's incredible stuff, but sometimes you got to say, all right, we're to the point of TMI. What do I really need? There's TMI.
So what are those essentials? If I'm maybe not in a 787 from Dublin, but if I'm doing a shorter flight, what do you think are those key 3-4 things that I absolutely cannot overlook?
Okay. You got to have your METARs for both your destination and your departure airport. You got to have your TAFs. Then I would start suggesting the GFAs, the graphic area forecast, if you're a VFR to IFR pilot flying locally. But of course, if you're flying overseas or abroad or longer treks, then you got to start looking at your upper air charts. See where the jet streams are, the upper lows and stuff like that. Yeah. And convective weather.
Yeah, that GFA, that graphical forecast for aviation in the U.S., I think is still overlooked. The area forecast went away a long time ago, and a lot of pilots don't know that the GFA tool is pretty good and a lot more visual and easy to interpret.
just to brag, Canada started first with the Tropical Area Forecast. Well,
thanks for the help on that one, Canada. You know, when it comes to these forecasts, there's lots of jokes people make about, you know, oh, the weatherman, he never has to be right, and ha-ha, we all laugh at that. But don't the statistics suggest we're actually getting a lot better at weather forecasting?
Top-notch, yes. I always tell the guys in the flight deck, I said, no one ever remembers when the weatherman is right, but they do an incredible job. And we're a pilot, cynical pilots, will admit the accuracy of the weatherman is with upper winds. We're flying along at flight level 390, and we're looking out the windows, wind readout saying, you know, 290 at 40 knots, and we look at our flight plan, and they're almost within a few degrees and a few knots. It's amazing.
Talk to us about your weather flying thought process en route. You mentioned a little bit pre-flight there and looking at different tools. What are you thinking? Obviously, in your case, you're in the flight levels, turbine airplane.
Yeah.
But let's say, you know, we're crossing a cold front. You look out the window, there's clouds ahead. What are you thinking? What are you looking at in a situation like that en route?
Okay, for a cold front, if it's an active cold front, it's going to be there's going to be a lot of convective weather associated. So I want the tops of these clouds. The 787, we can get up to 41,000 feet. Actually, we can get up to 43,000 if we're using oxygen. So I want to know the cloud tops. So am I going to top this stuff? And if the icing conditions and turbulence, if I had to descend through it into the front. So we're looking at that. We as an airline pilot, we have the advantage of flight dispatch looking after us. So we have a team of flight dispatchers working 24/7, and they have a wealth of information, including PIRUPs from other flights. Air Canada has 700 flights a day, and then our connectors have another 700 flights a day. So we have possibly up to 1,400 PIRUPs that we have access to. So there's a whole team looking after us. Unfortunately, for the little guy, he's the one-man band. He's going to look after everything. So to fly through front, it's going to be a challenge for them.
What's been the biggest change in your career when it comes to weather flying? Obviously, more information, but what has changed about how you approach weather this point in your career versus earlier on?
Well, the weather apps, the iPads. Now we have internet in the flight deck, although sometimes the internet is not all that good because we have a Kevlar-made flight deck door that's sort of preventing the Wi-Fi to get into the flight deck. But if I go back in J class or business class, I get a really good connection. But the internet is by far, updating all our weather apps. And it's just amazing. I mean, I could go pick around thunderstorms now based on the internet around the equator, the intertropical convergence zone. And I think it's all great tools, keeping us safe.
One of the places where you got a lot of your weather education was Atlantic Canada, Nova Scotia, out that way, which I flew to a few years back and thought was just a fascinating part of the world. A great place to fly, very interesting people and culture. It's also an area that's pretty famous for creating some not great weather.
For sure.
So, what's the worst weather you've seen out that way in your career? What drives that unique environment?
When I teach weather to the Air Canada new hires, I ask everyone in the class, I say, who in this class has a Torbay story? Now, Torbay is St. John's, Newfoundland. It's infamous for the armpit of the world as far as weather. It's the windiest, cloudiest, rainiest, freezing precip airport in the world. But that's in Newfoundland. You're talking more the Maritimes, which is including Nova Scotia. But people have to realize when weather systems move from west to east, they sort of converge towards the east coast of Canada. So they're on the focal point of about four or five major tracts of low pressure system. So, and as they move from west to east, they intensify. So they pack a punch. So there's the east coast of Canada and, Boston, northeast of the United States sees a lot of wind because of these intensifying low pressure systems. So we got the winds, you got the cloud, you got the low visibility, and we also have advection fog. So a lot of low visibility, foggy airports like Halifax, St. John's, Newfoundland, and Sydney, Nova Scotia.
And where's a place that American pilots should check out if we want to fly up that way in Canada? What should be on our list?
Oh, yeah. Well, get into Halifax. Everyone loves a layover in Halifax. Nova Scotians are very friendly. And if you can get to St. John's, Newfoundland, the weather is poor. However, they're probably the most friendliest people on the planet.
And how about your tips for American pilots flying to Canada and haven't done it before? My experience is it's easier than most people think. Would you agree?
We've got a great air traffic control system. And also, check in with the flight service specialist. They'd be willing to help. And they'll keep you safe.
Doug, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have some more questions.
Earn your pilot's license. Get current or add a rating. No matter what your goal is, Sporty's pilot training app will save you time and money. It's available on all your devices, including iPad, iPhone, Android, and smart TVs, so you can access Sporty's award-winning courses anywhere. Plus, with automatic sync between platforms and free lifetime updates, you'll always be current. Over 25 courses are available, from private pilot to aerobatics. Visit sporties.com/discover for a free trial. Now, back to pilot's discretion.
We're back with Doug Morris, who currently flies a Boeing 787 all over the world, but he's also logged over 14,000 hours in Airbus models. So, Doug, I'm curious how you would describe the popular debate. How would you describe the personality between these two different companies' airplanes?
First of all, John, if you had Boeing pilots and Airbus pilots in the same room, they would separate like water and oil. each guy thinks their airplane is better than the other. I've flown, as you mentioned, about 22 years of Airbus. And I thought, okay, Airbus is the way it's at. That's the airplane. It's taken me a while. It's taken me 5 years. But now I'm starting to think Boeing's got a pretty good product. And that 787 is a very nice product. So you're probably going to ask me which one's my favorite. I really thought the Airbus was very polished. Boeing is not so polished, but they have some very neat features and they've done a great job.
Do you have to put your mind in Boeing mode versus Airbus mode, or do you just sort of naturally adapt with time?
Yes, you do. You have to stick with that airplane. And now we're not allowed even to mention that word. I was flying as we're doing training there a few days ago, and I knew the candidate was ex-Airbus. But the supervisor that was overseeing my training, he said, we shouldn't bring up that word Airbus in the flight deck. You know, jokingly, but there's a lot of truths spoken in jest.
What's the biggest difference day to day now that you're flying a Boeing? What's a habit you had to unlearn or change as a Boeing pilot?
Well, that control column between our legs there, that, you know, we always joke about that. What's this thing here? But yeah, we had to get used to that, but it is a great feature. I love the HUD. HUD is a great tool for landing. You know, it's giving me altitude readout above the runway. So you can really grease it on with that HUD. The Airbus, we didn't have the HUD. But the joystick on the Airbus, everyone says, oh, that must be a tough thing to learn. And that was probably one of the more easier things to learn. You can get used to the joystick in about a minute. It was the auto thrust system on the Airbus that was difficult for many pilots to get a handle on.
Do you think the differences between those two airplanes are getting bigger or smaller as the years go on? Are they diverging, or are we all sort of converging on the same basic concept?
Well, good question, because now the 787, I noticed hearing that the Airbus 350 is taking a lot of ideas the 787 had, sort of composite. They also pressurized at 6,000 feet instead of 8,000 feet. They have the bigger windows. So, yeah, and they don't have bleed air anymore. They have CACs or cabin air compressors to pressurize the cabin. So I think Airbus looked over at Boeing and said, hey, you guys got a pretty good product there. But Boeing's looking at Airbus too.
You spent a lot of time, I know, before you started flying Airbus and the heavy stuff. Like yes. A lot of people, you flew Czechs, you flew Navajos, Piston Twins, yes. Kind of the classic time-building yeah. career ladder that the whole generation of pilots did.
Yeah.
But that's an option that doesn't really exist, at least as much anymore. There are fewer of those jobs. People aren't flying checks around as much. Do you think today's airline pilots are missing some part of the weather education because they're not flying some of those missions?
Absolutely. Either coming right out of flight school, jumping right into the airlines or the connectors. Some of them only have 1,000 hours, and the experience level is just not there. And that's the problem with a lot of airlines now. They just don't have the experienced people to upgrade to left seat captain.
What do you think you learned that was most valuable during that time? I mean, certainly you probably had a couple close calls, but what do you learn as a pilot flying checks or flying freight and building time that is valuable as an airline pilot?
Well, you have to learn as an airline pilot, you have to learn to delegate, and you have to, it takes 60 departments to get an airline or airborne, and all it takes is one of those departments to knock it off the rails. But you have to trust everyone else to get that airliner airborne. And so the system has to be trusted. And that's a tough thing for a lot of pilots learning the left seat, going captain, is bestowing trust.
What do you think a good way is to build time in 2022? What would you suggest to somebody who's pursuing an airline career? Yeah. What should they do?
I get that asked a lot because everyone wants that magic pill so they can become an airline pilot with 25,000 hours experience. I would suggest to this day is becoming a flight instructor. That way you can build up some time relatively fast. If not, buy a twin engine endorsement such as the Navajo and start flying the Navajo, build up the twin time.
What's your best non-obvious career advice for an airline pilot these days? Maybe a soft skill or a life experience they should pursue. What would make you happy to sit next to a new hire in the right seat?
I always appreciate the new hires that have a post-secondary education. I find they tend to make a better pilot if they have more than just a grade 12 and a private pilot license and all the other pilot licenses. So post-secondary education, I like that in a pilot.
And what do you think the airline training industry needs to do as a whole to adapt to the changing generation of pilots? Are there parts we need to add to it, or the things we need to change?
Well, as you know, they're coming in with less and less experience. We are hiring about 1,000 pilots in the next year and a half. Right now, we have ground schools taking up to 40 pilots, and there's a wide spectrum of pilots there. That you've got your, 500 hours at Air Canada, but about 1,500 to 2,000 hour pilots. But we're bringing a lot of experience into from Cathay Pacific and Emirates Airlines. They're all wanting to come and fly for Air Canada. So you got a wide spectrum there. But putting experienced shoulders on young bodies, it's going to be a challenge.
Take me back to your Navajo days. Is it a good idea or a bad idea to scrape ice off the windshield in flight while you're flying a Navajo?
I've been there. Yes, the Navajo had a little side window, and that's what we were given. It was little scrapers to scrape the ice off the Navajo because a lot of the windscreens were not heated in the Navajo and the airplanes that I flew for Eastern Flying Service. It was a challenge, but I got through it. Some guys did not get through it, unfortunately. They ran into some weather scenarios. And in fact, my last book, This Is Your Captain Speaking, there was two young pilots in their early 20s. 2 years ago, they were training in Quebec, and they wrapped themselves around power lines, and they didn't make it. So I dedicated the book to them.
All right, Doug, at the end of every one of these episodes, we do a lightning round. We call it Ready to Copy. I'll ask some questions on a variety of topics, and you give me your quick answer. Are you ready to copy?
Sure, let's do it.
What gets your vote for the most underrated weather tool?
The most underrated weather tool is the GFA, the graphic area forecast. That should be looked at a lot more by the more inexperienced pilot.
How about the most overrated weather tool?
The most overrated weather tool is the weather apps. We're relying on them way too much.
What's your quick method for distinguishing moderate turbulence from light turbulence? Is it coffee, tray tables? What's the secret answer?
Moderate turbulence, it's basically when the jiggles turn into jolts.
Okay. You wrote once, quote, being a VFR pilot is much tougher than being an IFR pilot. Why do you say that?
It's because you are the one-man band. Being an IFR pilot, you just stick on a track, altitude, speed, and that's easy. That's the easy part. And you can fly in the cloud. Being a VFR pilot, you have to avoid that cloud. And that sometimes can be a very tough challenge.
What's the biggest difference about high altitude weather versus low altitude? When you move from that Navajo to the Airbus, what's something new you had to learn there?
Well, the transition altitude, 18,000 feet in North America, you've got to be setting your altimeter to 2902. A lot of guys aren't used to doing that stuff. And again, looking at the high level charts, looking at a jet stream, they don't appreciate those winds up there can be moving fast and they can give you some nasty rides.
What's the best airplane you've ever flown that wasn't a Boeing or an Airbus? I'm going to let you dodge that one.
Okay. I would say the Navajo. I really did like the Navajo. It was a fun airplane to learn twin engine operations.
You've written over 200 articles for non-pilots. I mentioned earlier in the Air Canada
yes.
magazine. You're sort of the spokesman for Air Canada
yes.
to the passengers. And I know your first article there, and probably one of the most common questions, is about turbulence.
Yes.
So what's your best explanation for what turbulence is and why passengers shouldn't worry about it?
That's exactly how I got into the flight magazine, was explaining why the bumps. And I tell everyone that there's Mother Nature creates about six different types of turbulence. And then there's, of course, the man-made turbulence of wake turbulence from another airplane.
And of those six types, which is the one you like the least?
Least convective turbulence. I do not like being near thunderstorms. They scare me. They still scare me.
They should scare everybody.
Yes.
What's the most interesting airport in all of Canada that you've flown to?
The most interesting weather-wise is St. John's, Newfoundland. That's on the east coast of Canada. The most beautiful airport flying into Canada, I would give Vancouver. I always love flying into Vancouver. It's where the mountains meet the Pacific Ocean. Gorgeous.
What's your favorite overnight destination as an airline pilot?
My favorite overnight destination would be London Heathrow. That's Europe. As far as Asia, Tokyo. And those would be the two. As far as the American side, I love San Francisco.
What's your best tip for overcoming jet lag? You've surely done it many times in your career. What should us rookie passengers do?
In fact, I'm succumbing to jet lag right now. I just came in from Dublin, Ireland last night. Jet lag, yes, exercise. Now everyone thinks, excessive exercise, exerting yourself. No, actually just going out for a walk and getting air and airing your head is the way to counteract jet lag.
Are you a power through it guy or do you take a nap?
I take naps. I like my naps.
Flying out of Canada, I'm guessing you've seen your fair share of the Northern Lights on some of those northern
For sure,
flights,
yeah.
maybe.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe that view from the flight deck? What's that look like?
Well, we pilots, we tend to, the Northern Lights. So what we do, we like bringing in the flight attendants, and it's amazing their reactions when they see the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis.
All right, a non-aviation question. And as you mentioned, coming from Toronto, so I've got to ask you a hockey question.
Okay.
Is the shootout the right answer for deciding playoff games in hockey?
I do not like that, no. Keep going to overtime. In fact, I still play hockey, and I'm going to play hockey tonight. And it's with a whole bunch of Air Canada guys. Hopefully we don't have a shootout.
So let them just keep playing until they drop, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Our last question is always the same on pilot's discretion. Doug, you have one final flight, and we want to know, what are you flying and where are you going?
Sadly, it will be my last flight on the 787 when I retire. I'm going to retire in about 2 years. So probably my last flight will be from London Heathrow to Toronto. And let me tell you, there's going to be tears.
Doug, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pilot's Discretion, brought to you by Sporties, training and equipping pilots worldwide for over 60 years. For more episodes and today's show links, visit sporties.com/podcast. I'm John Zimmerman. We'll see you next time on Pilot's Discretion.